For our next virtual visit, we come to Whitechurch, again in New Ross and Feathered Union, just a little off the road from the main road, southwards from New Ross towards Feathered. When I visit a historic village or community, one of the things I often do to discover some of the background to the place, perhaps around the time its church was being built, is to look at that wonderful big two-volume job, Lewis's Topographical Dictionary, which was published in 1837. I'm fortunate enough to have a copy of it, and it gives detailed descriptions of every place in Ireland. And what's fascinating is that in describing their population, their agriculture, their industry, of course, it's a picture of Ireland just a few years before the famine, in a way, given the busyness that seems to be going on. One doesn't get a sense quite of the storm clouds, but then the writer is very preoccupied with the great estates. But it certainly does show the level of population then in places we would now regard as quite small. For example, the immediate area around Whitechurch had 1,300 plus inhabitants in Lewis's time. He also mentions an interesting thing that I didn't know till recently about there being a certain availability of tin, stannaries, in that part of the world. And he writes of the countryside round Whitechurch, a black mould resembling tin ore appears in veins in many parts of the parish, and there are quarries of roofing slate of an indifferent quality. The river, which abounds with the finest salmon, is here navigable for vessels of several hundred tons, and the inlets to Piltown and Camlin are navigable for small vessels. Well, a few years before the famine, one wonders how many of the ordinary tenants trying to make enough to live on the land were actually benefiting from the finest salmon thus described. Back to 2003, a world away. In that year, there was the completion in Dublin, central Dublin, of the spire on O'Connell Street. Ever since the destruction of the pillar in the 60s, and I mentioned that in an earlier reflection, there had been discussion about putting a new public monument on that site as a focal point for the city. And the spire was really meant to mark the millennium. It was to be light, bright, contemporary, pointing people upwards to new visions and lofty ideals at the beginning of a new century. Of course, people love it or hate it, and there's the usual Dublin capacity for nicknames. It's known as the protrusion in the confusion, just as the digital clock they tried unsuccessfully to put down in the Liffey to do a countdown to the millennium was known as the time and the slime, and then the sculpture of Anna Livia in O'Connell Street became rapidly known as the floozy and the jacuzzi. The spire is 120 metres high. It cost 4 million, and much of the steel for it was made in this diocese by Radley Engineering in Dungarvan. And remember, the Eiffel Tower was hated when it was new and then became iconic. Of course, we in the church are long in the business of towers and spires. Sometimes one wonders why we put them up, given the burden of maintenance they later become, like the spire in O'Connell Street. Are they to point the eye heavenwards? Or was it about the audibility and visibility of bells and clocks when churches had the responsibility of telling a local community the time? And by the way, I always think if one has a public clock, it should say the correct time. Some of them have lapsed from that, sadly. Hard to maintain them all, of course. Perhaps towers and spires sometimes are about sheer fashion. But our love of towers and spires in Ireland all goes back to round towers and the mystery, to some extent, of why they were put up. St. Canice's is a most famous example. But somebody once said, slightly cynically, round towers and handball courts are the two utterly distinctive contributions of Ireland to architecture and design. Were round towers built for people to take refuge from the Vikings, going into the tower and pulling up the ladder after them? I doubt it, although we were all taught that in school. It wouldn't have been hard for the Vikings to besiege the tower and put light a fire all around it and smoke the monks out. Were they bell towers? Were they for interesting liturgical practices of displaying relics, or I suspect where they share a fashion and rivalry between great churches. In other words, if they had one in Kildare, there needed to be a better one in Kilkenny. And to me, the O'Connell Street spire similarly says rather a lot about millennium fashion, flaunting things, pre-recession, highly competitive with, as it were, the focal points of other comparable cities. But at least the whole project gave some good employment in Dungarvan.